All right, welcome to Making It in Movie Making with me, Richard Fish, and today I'm talking to Josh Williams about something potentially a little bit different to the usual. Josh, can you tell me, like, in what ways you're a creative person? Like, what are the realms you're working in?
Okay, so I am a singer. I'm also an actor. I own a theatre company called Williams Creatives. I also write. I think that's about it overall.
He says as though it's nothing. So I'd say it's a bit different because it seems like you're more kind of theatre focused rather than film. Like normally, have you got any interest in film stuff, or are you purely about the theatre?
I'm interested in film stuff, and I have written a couple of short films, but never really taken them forward. And I've done some filming in the past, but I would definitely say that I was probably more theatre focused at this moment in time, but would like to look at film again, maybe in the future at some point.
Cool. All right. So let's start off with where did the dream begin? Like the usual kind of how old were you? When did you decide you wanted to do this? What did you try and do first?
Okay. So the first sort of creative thing I think I did, I think it was at singing at the end of the year six Leavers Assembly. When before then I just kind of warbled. I didn't think that was actually any good until I started working with the people that were working with us. So that was kind of like my first foray into it. And then I didn't really do as much at high school, just like some shows here and there. I grew up in Manchester, and they did like this thing between the schools and colleges called Stars on the Rise, which was basically a ripoff of Stars in Your Eyes. I remember doing Paradise by the Dashboard Lights with my friend and thinking this was the weirdest song for us to do in this competition, but here we were.
Did you have to dress up like in Stars in Their Eyes to do that? You say it was a ripoff. Like, did you have to dress up as the people?
To an extent, but obviously I can't make myself be Meatloaf. I don't think me and Meatloaf actually share any similarities whatsoever. So I guess we just kind of dressed up. But I remember them coming to school and we had to do like film like intros and stuff. And it was just really weird. And I remember just thinking this is very, very strange. But we went ahead and we did the performance, which was a lot of fun. Me and my friend Nikki from school, we did it. And it was a lot of fun, but I also can never forget the awkward 50-second break between any singing and just this weird dance that we were doing in the square. It was so weird. It was so off. And then after that, I kind of stopped performing. And kind of focused on, I was doing health and social care and psychology at college. I was just kind of like focusing on those things. And I remember sitting down with my mum and just saying that I was bored. And she was just kind of saying, you're not really doing what you wanted to do. So I just kind of left that and just went into performing arts straight
from
there.
So what age were you then when you made that decision?
I was 17. And I moved from Manchester down to Luton and just started on this performing arts course. Just sort of went for it from there. And that's when I kind of did. There was an audition for Fame and I went with a friend just to support. And he was like, oh, just kind of audition with me. And I got one of the main roles in that. The following year I kind of was in Cinderella, the pantomime and stuff like that, and then I just kind of started to spread out to different things that weren't just college. And then when I finished college, when I was about 19, me and my friend were like, oh, we're just gonna work, we're not gonna go uni, we're just gonna work or whatever. And then we got drunk and decided, you know what, clearing's tomorrow, let's go to uni. We applied and we called round and we waited until both of us got on the same course. And that's how I ended up at De Montfort University, where I studied performing arts for 3 years. And it just kind of felt like it just kind of just spanned and it just went crazy. And I was doing lots of different performances in different places and just finding lots of different contacts. And then I finished uni and said, I need to go and get an adult job. I need to go and find something. And then I started working with children. And then I realized that I love working with children, and I still work with children now, and I love it. But my passion really is performing and creating and all that kind of stuff. And that's when I wrote my first play. I was 22 when I wrote my first play. And then I kind of wrote it, and I remember talking to my best friend, Katrina, who I met at college, and who was the person I got drunk with and ended up at uni with. And I remember saying to her, I've written this show, but I'm not really going to do anything with it. It's just going to kind of be there to, just to say that I've done it. She was like, that's insane. And my mum said to me, it's insane to write something and not do anything with it. And that's when my first show sort of came together. And I kind of said, you know what, I'm going to make this work alongside work. And that was the first time that it kind of dawned on me that I could have both. I didn't need to be one or the other kind of thing.
It's interesting. Like, I feel like a lot of people I've spoken to, and like me too, have the same sort of thing, like trying to balance like a normal job with a creative life. So how long did you kind of wait? Because you said you kind of went straight to get a normal job after uni. Did you look for other performing arts things, or did you just not think, see it as an option, like after you graduated?
I kind of looked around at different things, but my life at the time and the sort of changes and challenges in my life just kind of meant that I needed to focus on finding something that was a guaranteed income, and I couldn't really waste any time, you know what I mean, trying to go in audition and stuff like that. I needed to pay my bills, I needed to pay my rent, and I've never been that kind of person that's like, you know, I'm gonna sleep with the lights off and not have any lights and not have any gas or electric or whatever just so that I can audition. Like, I've always been aware that I need certain things in place. And part of that came with having to go and get a job. I didn't have any fallback or, you know, anyone to financially support me. So I just had to just do my thing. But it's become apparent to me over the years, and as I've gotten older, that it's not enough. I have to be doing something creative as well, or else it just doesn't make me feel fulfilled in any way.
So was it a long gap, or was it kind of straight away as soon as you start working that you got writing this play?
It was a long gap. I was just focusing on work. I was sort of in a different place. I kind of said to myself, oh, you know, I've done this degree and it was great, but I'm probably not going to do anything else with it. So I'm just going to move on. And then, so it was quite a long gap. It was probably about 2 or 3 years before I was like, okay, no, I have this idea. I'm going to run with it. And I just went for it.
So did you take that first play anywhere? Like, did you ever push to get that on? Like, what happened with it?
So the play was called On the Surface We Smile. We did a preview in Loughborough, and, you know, got a good mix of audience in. And I got loads of sort of feedback back from the audience because it was people that I'd either been at uni with or whatever. And so I went back and I changed it and rejigged it and stuff like that. The whole premise of the play is that you've got the two central characters who sort of drive along the other scenes, which all focus on a different issue. So when I first wrote it, the issues are quite heavy. You know, we're dealing with drug and alcohol abuse, you know, sex trafficking, and domestically violent relationships. So they're really heavy subjects. So when everybody watched it the first time, they were like, oh my God, it was so great. But God, am I depressed now? So part of it was about how to lighten up the show and still make it an enjoyable experience, but also get across what the characters were trying to get across. So that's what I kind of focused on. And then I said, okay, I'm going to do this again. And again, my life changed behind the scenes. And it was kind of like there was nothing holding me back anymore. There was no one sort of saying you need to be focusing on your job and all these kind of things. So I said, you know what, I'm just going to go and do it. So I did it again in Melton Mowbray in 2018. And that's when Williams Creatives became a thing, my company. That from that show, that's when it became a thing. And it was a really incredible experience to be able to go back and really put my all into the play again and really build on these characters. And then we did that show in Melton. And after that show, I kind of said to myself, okay, I'm done. I'm quite happy with that. I'm just going to focus on other ideas and bits and pieces. And then we had a theatre approach us and say, look, we want to do this show. The theatre was in London. And we said, you know what, if we're going down to London, we may as well hit a few others on the way down. And so we planned this tour for last year. And then unfortunately, COVID hit and kind of ruined that plan. And so even though it was an incredible experience, and even though I was really excited to see it go on tour and to go to these different places, and we kind of made the decision to kind of close the door on that show now. And I think that's part of me moving forward from the person that wrote that show, because I'm a totally different person now, all these years later.
So how long has it been? Like, how much later are we talking now? I don't know how long this process is.
So the last performance of On the Surface was in November 2018. So yeah, I guess to now. Right. I feel like I want to be writing about different things, and over lockdown I've sort of worked on my second play, which is almost like polar opposite to On the Surface with Smile. And it's been really nice to get to know new characters and to explore new characters, new themes, etc. It's been really good.
So how did you go about finding a venue for this first play? Like, just to kind of step back a bit, like, how did you find, did you perform it yourselves? What, how did you get that into a theatre?
So what we did was I was working with a organisation called the National Citizen Service. And as part of that, they had done an activity at this place called Fearon Hall in Loughborough. And when I went to oversee and support what was going on, I bumped into the person that works there, and this hall that they were using was basically a theatre, had all the lighting, the curtains, everything. And she was like, you know, if you ever want to put on a performance here, go for it. And it just kind of felt like it just fell into place, because this was just after the show was finished, and I was like, wow. And it just fell into place. And so I was like, okay, I'm going to do this. This is fine. And then I spoke to my other good friend, Laura, and talked to her about the show. And I said, you know what? These two central characters are actually based on us. And she was like, oh, that's incredible. Okay, I will play the female character if you play the male character. I said, okay, that's fine.
So sort of plain versions of yourselves?
Basically, yeah. Just heightened versions of ourselves. Right. I mean, yeah. And she said, you know, you play the male character, I'll play the female character. I said, okay, cool. And then my friend Katrina came on board, and she played one of the other characters. And bit by bit, the cast was just pulled together, and we just went for it. And then after that preview, I was like, that was really cool, but there's just so much that I would change. And I think I was learning so much, not only as a writer and a director and an actor, but also as someone that has to facilitate everything. Because the first time, I got so much wrong. I'm not going to lie. Like, the scheduling was, you know, off, and rehearsals were stressful. One day, I think I even forgot to order the food. Like, it was a lot. Because it was about me learning to manage all these different roles. So I wanted to give it another go, and I wanted to try again. And the second time, we brought in a lot of new casts. There weren't a lot that were in that first original preview. And that just made that just changed the whole show. And it made it into something that was even better. Not that there was anything wrong with the first one, but it just made it into something that was incredible. And when we wanted to put Melton Theatre, I sort of said to my mum, I was like, look, this is what I'm going to do. And she was like, yeah, yeah, cool. And I just saved up and booked it.
You can basically buy space in a theatre and then sell your own tickets and things to get the money back. Is that how it works? I've never...
So Melton was kind of like, I booked it, I had to pay a deposit, and then it was, you know, they took the fee away from the tickets that we sold. And if there was anything else, then I would have to pay that or whatever. But I just saved up and just did it because I wanted to, and it felt like it was a really good time for me, and I'm really glad that I did, to be honest.
Of that, you get the London offer. Does that mean that somebody came to see it and kind of thought, yeah, this would be good? I mean, how did that happen?
Yeah, they came to see it, and we'd had sort of our Facebook page and information out about it, and it was on our website, and they came to see it and they liked the show and they just thought that it would work down in their venue. So they approached, they sent me an email, and I read the email and then collapsed in shock and then got up and rang my business partner and said, we need to make this work. This is going to be incredible. And then we went to Mount Sorrel Memorial Centre to just have a look around. There's a potential second venue, and talked to them about it. And we mentioned on the surface, we smiled, and they were really excited about having the show. And it was just kind of, you know, contacting people and making them aware of the show and what it was about. And it just kind of snowballed from there, to be fair.
So what kind of happened for you to set up a business? Can you tell me a bit about that? Like, when did that become necessary, or what do you do with the business?
So I was literally just going to do on the surface and be done. And then one of my other friends, Sharon Brown, said to me, let's go for a coffee and have a chat. So we did. And she was like, do you know what? I think you've got something really, really good here. I think that we should start a business and turn it into a business and a group and keep running. And I was like, I'm not so sure, because I'm not sure if I've got the time. But by the end of this coffee, which lasted about 4.5 hours, we decided, you know what? No, this is great. This is what we're going to do. So we did on the surface, and then we had a meeting and we said, is this what we're going to carry on with? And she was like, yeah, I'm down for it. And so we came up with the idea for our next show, which was Miscast. And then we just kind of formed. We pulled in a couple of other people. So Steph Lee, one of the other people that you spoke to, she was involved at one point. And then there's Tom Brooks, who is our technical advisor. He's always been involved, and lots of different people were just sort of pulled in into like a committee. And we decided to run it as like a non-for-profit. And this is what we were going to do. So then we did Miscast, and that was really successful. It was more successful than we imagined it would be. And we did that at the Sue Townsend Theatre in Leicester. And then while we were doing Miscast, we were like, okay, let's book in another show. So we did Communicating Doors by Alan Ayckbourn, and it was kind of this thing that just...
So these are established plays that you were doing?
So Miscast was a concept that we came up with. So it's like a cabaret evening, basically, and we just miscasted all of the performances.
Oh, that sounds fun.
And then, yeah, that was a challenge, but really good. And then Alan Ayckbourn obviously wrote Communicating Doors, so that's established. and then it just kind of went forward from there. And then I know Steph through doing Murder Mysteries with her at Sterling Murder, and I also worked for Murder 57. And she had been approached by the hotel that she was working in a lot, and they said, look, what have you got for Christmas? We don't really want a murder mystery. We want something a little bit more interactive and a bit more performance-based, where the audience don't have to work at anything. They just watch it and enjoy it. And she had came to me and said, do you think this is something that Williams Graces might want to do? And I was like, yeah, sure. And then we made up this Christmas performance, which was called Oliver Twist Christmas. So it was like a mix between Oliver and A Christmas Carol. And we sort of brought this performance together, and it was singing and dancing and stilt walkers and a little bit of acting. And it was like, this is a really great product, actually. This is really fun, and the audience really like it. And that was sort of the basis of now what we call our theme party nights, what we'll be pushing forward. So we did that.
Which Christmas was that?
That was Christmas 2019.
Okay.
Yes, because 2020 was a write-off.
Right.
and then we booked in Miscast again. So the first time it was Miscast Musical Cabaret, and then it was Miscast at the movies. And this was, this performed March 2020. before lockdown happened, when lockdown was just something that we all just kind of went, yeah, sure, that's what happened. And that was more about taking songs from movies, so iconic songs like I've Had the Time of My Life, Dirty Dancing, and then taking musicals that have been turned into movies. And so we did that performance. And then On the Surface We Smile was supposed to start the week afterwards. And Monday morning, the Monday of that week, we just got a call from our theatre saying that they were cancelling because lockdown was happening, and then all of them cancelled. And it was just like, okay, okay, let's go back to the drawing board type of thing.
And since that, you've decided you don't want to do Under the Surface, was it On the Surface We Smile?
On the Surface We Smile, yeah. Yeah, since then, since the tour ended, we tried to sort of restart it again, and then lockdown happened again. And like I said, we're a not-for-profit company, and we haven't really been going long enough to sustain any sort of losses or anything like that. And so although it was a hard decision, I think it was important to us and me that we came out of this with some sort of growth, and it wasn't about us doing the same play over and over again, but it's about us actually growing into different areas.
And so the miscasting, how does that work with the songs? Do you have to like pay music rights? I don't know how that works.
So it works through PRS basically, because we're not changing the words. Okay. We're not changing, we're not speaking any of the lines that the characters speak in the show. So we're literally, we're basically a CD player, a live CD player.
Yeah.
So it sort of works through paying the PRS. So at no point do we allude to the fact that the song is ours, because it's not.
Yeah.
You know, we're taking it from a musical or whatever. So it just goes through that.
Huh. I've never looked at theatre, so I didn't know how these things, because obviously with film it's different. It's just like, yeah, don't use the song, you can't afford it. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
So let's talk about some of your other kind of stuff. So have you done other things just as an actor, apart from kind of things that you've created?
Yes, I have. I've done lots of different sort of musical theatre shows. I did a short film that was August 2018 with a writer and director that I know, Christopher Brown. That was called... oh God, it's flown out of my head. He's going to kill me for that.
Let me know if you find the link. I'll add it to your episode and people can just click on it.
Yeah. Oh God, he's actually going to kill me. So I did that short film with him, and that was really great, because that was probably the first short film I've done in years. So I was kind of just getting back into the swing of like night shoots, because it was all filmed. Most of it was filmed at night. There was a couple of like day scenes, but most of it was, you know, working through the night or whatever. But that was really fun. We had a really great cast and crew around him that were really fun. So I kind of did that. And then I also did some stuff with some of the other societies in Leicester, but again, more on the musical theatre side. So I did Parade with the Laos, the Leicester Amateur Operatic Society. That is a mouthful. So I did Parade with them. And then the following year, I did Lift with another society, which was a lot of fun. So I guess since Williams Creators really started off, I've not necessarily done too much with other people. So I've just kind of focused on the company and what we're doing. But I think that's what I want to do a lot of when we come, now we're coming out of lockdown, apparently, and getting back to real life, is I'd like to spread out a little bit and go and find other bits and pieces that I want to do.
And with your company, like, how do you do castings? It seems like you've got quite a big network as it is, but do you kind of look for people for your plays outside of that as well?
Yeah, so we advertise a lot on Facebook, our website, and we also use Star Now. Mandy, which is the place casting for Pro, I think.
Yeah.
Backstage. So we'll kind of use those three as the sort of base. And then a lot of it is word of mouth as well. So just talking to the other people that we come across. Murder Mysteries is incredible for networking because there's actors all over the place that are doing everything. So a lot of times, you know, you'll turn up to do a performance and be like, oh, hey, you know, we're auditioning for this at the moment. And then they might come through. But we do have kind of, I would say, core performers as part of our group at the minute. But I'd like to see a lot more new people coming into it.
So how did you first get involved with Murder Mysteries? It seems like that's quite a link to different things as well.
Yeah, I went to, my mum is obsessed with Agatha Christie, obsessed. She is one of those people that will tell you how it's going to end before it ends. It's really annoying. She always gets it right. So I said to her, let's go and see a murder mystery. And we did. And it was really weird. And we were very badly behaved. So we kept asking questions that were like trying to throw the actors off, and we nearly caused the whole storyline to fall apart. Now I know that's really irritating, but at the time I was just slightly bored, you know. And my mum turned to me at the end and she went, you know what, you could do this. And I was like, yeah, I guess, maybe, whatever. She's like, no, you should audition. So I applied and I didn't think I'd hear back. And then I auditioned, which was basically...
Was this the same company that you'd watched that you applied to?
Yeah, right, it was okay. The same company. And it
hope
was
they didn't remember you.
Yeah, thank God, none of them were at the audition. But it was basically just me shouting at this other person, because the murder mysteries are very dramatic. So, you know, if you can't have an argument with someone, you're in the wrong place. And then he was like, yeah, cool, you're in. And I was like, okay. And at first, it was just something that I did probably two or three times a month. And then it just really, really picked up because the company changed and became Murder 57. And Jamie and Lawrence, who own Murder 57, really spurred the company forward. And all of a sudden, it was like the murders were just coming from everywhere. Like I couldn't. And I couldn't keep up where I was. One day I was in Brighton, next day I was in Scarborough, then I was in Leicester, I was like everywhere. And it was so much fun. I loved it and I still love it, because it's that thing of just instantly becoming somebody else. And I think improvisation is so important and it's the major skill I feel to learn as an actor. Because anything can happen at any time, particularly in theatre, that throws you off. If you can't improvise, then you've not got a hope in hell. It was incredible, and I just loved it. And then I met so many different people through it, and my main base was Grantham, because that's where I worked sort of the most. And then Steph said, you know, I'm starting this company, and we're going to start murdering in Grantham and Nottingham. Would you like to come on board? And I was like, yeah, that would be great. And then I had written a murder mystery when I was bored one time. And I said, oh, do you want to have a look at this? And she read it. And she was like, yeah, I love it. It's great. And then I was like, okay, cool. And then she just dropped me a message. She was like, okay, so we're performing a murder in July in Nottingham. Can you change it from a weekend to an evening one? And I was like, okay, cool. And then it just happened. And then it was like working for both of them. So I was equally busy because I was either writing and murdering for Steph or just murdering for Murder 57. And yeah, I think by the time lockdown came, I don't think there was a weekend I ever had free. It was pretty much Friday and Saturday was for killing other people or being killed myself.
So if you were moving around to quite different towns and things doing this, does that mean you had to like stay overnight in various places?
Or? Yeah, sometimes, depending on how far it was.
And does that come out of the job or do you have to pay for that? How does that work? I'm just trying to, like, I'm interested in the logistics. Oh, no,
that came out of the company. You know, If we were traveling somewhere that was outside of our area, then, you know, they don't want you to be out of pocket out in any way, so they cover your expenses. Yeah, they don't want you sleeping in your car and then driving up to Scarborough the next day. And I feel like, you know, at one point I was traveling quite far for Murder 57 because, you know, they were expanding so quickly and they're pulling people together and stuff like that. And it's kind of going around and just being in different places. But even that in itself was incredible. Like every weekend, just being somewhere entirely new. and just working it out, like the charity shops. I love them. I love charity shops.
Yeah.
Like I go around looking for costume pieces and just getting to know the different areas and stuff and working with the hotels. It's been incredible. Like,
so, and it sounds a bit like being a low-key rock star traveling around doing different performances every weekend.
Yeah, it feels like it, honestly. And then you get to be someone totally different. And I just feel like, sometimes murder mysteries get a bad rep from, you know, classically trained actors and kind of look at it as something that's not that great. And I kind of feel it's a bit silly because actually, you're constantly honing your skills. You're constantly becoming different people and learning to do different things. Like murder mysteries have got me to do stuff that I would never do as a person or an actor. It's just not a thing. And that's been incredible, really enlightening. So I'm really, really thankful for Murder 57 and Sterling Murder. And I just can't wait to get back.
So how does writing a murder work? Because it's not like writing a script, because like you said, there's... you know, there's lots of improvisation in there. So do you have to kind of decide certain things have to happen in this order and then it's flexible? I mean, how does writing one work?
You come up with the storyline and the characters. I always tend to come up with the murderer and the murdered person and work out why they've killed them. And then when you write the script itself, you give people prompts. So it will say such and such goes across the room and looks at the board and sees some sort of evidence that gets on their nerves. And so then they go and argue with this person and it might give you a cue as it might say to me, okay, you've got to say to him, how could you do this to me? Because it triggers something else. But I can say whatever else I like within reason, obviously no swearing or whatever, as long as I end with, how could you do this to me? Right. So that it triggers the next thing. So it just kind of runs like that. And then when you get to the end, it's insane. The final part of a murder mystery is insane because there's so many things happening at the same time, and then, you know, obviously what we're all there for, someone dies. So it's kind of just getting to that climax and making sure that everyone's entertained as you're going along and getting to that point, because there can be really some times when whatever the problem is, there's some really poignant performances and you know that you've got the audience, because all of a sudden everyone shut up and they're just staring at this performance and seeing it happen in front of them. Or you feel them, you hear them reacting when you say something horrible to someone or when someone runs out crying or whatever. And it's just incredible. And in that minute when the person stumbles in dead, it's really hard to explain unless you're in the room. Because it either quiets the room and they're like, what the hell just happened? Or they absolutely lose it because there's a dead person. And it's
What's it like with different guests? Because I'm imagining that some people get really into it and want to ask everybody questions, and other people just kind of sit quiet and eat the dinner and let it happen around them.
Yeah. Yeah.
You do get so, like, what do you, so like, what do you want?
You want them to be involved and like to care what's happening, but you do also get the guests that like corner you and will like it's honestly like being in an interrogation. Like they are not letting you move for anything. And sometimes if you're the murderer and someone's doing that to you, they're like scrambling your brain, because all you can think of is I killed them. And you're trying not to say that. It's like you're being scrambled. So it's good that the cast, we all kind of keep an eye out for each other. So if we can see someone in that situation, we can kind of move them. Because the guests can get like that. Some of the guests get really into it. They'll dress up. They'll be, you know, they'll be following you down corridors. They'll be doing anything to kind of try and solve the murder. So you want an equal balance of the two. You don't want the ones that just stare at you and go, why are you here? And when is my chicken dinner coming? but you also don't want the ones that are like chasing you outside when you're just trying to look at your notes real quick.
Do you know about secret cinema? Because that's a very similar kind of thing that's getting a lot of respect kind of recently. Like I've been to a couple of them and they're really fun. Do you know about those?
Yeah, I've heard of them. I really want to go to one. I've just kind of not had the opportunity yet. But yeah, I've heard of them. They sound really cool.
Yeah, it seems really cool. I'd really, really similar thing. Like, it's interactive, and I was thinking, you know, you could maybe do one. I don't know how you get the rights for those, or how you get involved in them, but it's kind of murder mystery style, but it has like a hook of, oh, it's all based on this film, or, you know, and they have sets and things. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So, as well as your acting, I've heard that your big thing is singing and music. So, how's that all wrapped up in this?
I've always sung. My mum will tell you again. She's always telling me to shut up. She says that my voice is too loud for a house. So I remember when I was in a musical, she made me rehearse outside in the garden. Yep. That was the thing. So I've always sung. And I kind of just, I was aware that I could sing, but I just, you know, it was just a thing, whatever. And then as I got older, it was kind of more the thing that I was known for. So it almost took over, because then it was like, everyone forgot that I could act or that I could write. It was just about singing. And it almost took over. And I can't complain. I've sung in some really incredible venues, and I've been up and down the country singing and for different performances, etc. But it kind of took over. And then as I got older, I was like, okay, I'm going to write an EP, going to do it. But there was one problem. I can't play an instrument, and I can't read music, and I can't write music. So I was like,
I can relate to this. I love to sing, but I don't know anything about singing.
Nothing. And I was like, okay, this is fine. It's all going to be good. And then over the time, I sort of met different people who sort of helped me develop different parts, really. And I was like, okay, I'm going to do this EP. It's going to be cool. So the first song was Me Against the World, which I kind of wrote with one friend, and then another friend developed it more, and then it developed more, and it kept changing as it was going along. And at first it was like, will this be this guy's only song? Will he never write anything else? Because again, I can write plays, I can write characters, not a problem, but songs, there's something about it, it just doesn't click for me in some way. And then the second song came along, which was 12 Months and Forever, which I wrote with my friend Laura, who I spoke about a bit earlier. And then she had a really incredible song she'd written called Pay the Rent, which I loved. And for years, I like pussyfooted around and like hinted at singing this song. And then eventually I was just like, just let me sing a song. So that's what happened. and then, around the same time that I decided, you know what, I'm going to do On the Surface of Melton, I said, no, I'm going to do this EP. I'm not going to talk about it anymore. I'm just going to do it. And then I found the producer who created the songs and created all of the music behind it. And I went in and I recorded the songs. And I was like, this is really cool. Like this, I'm really happy with this. And then I released it, and it's not been particularly like, I'm not top of the pops or anything like that. Is that even a thing anymore? I'm not on it anyway, even if it is.
I don't think buying CDs is a thing for most people.
No, but I think even more so, that was just one I did to say that I'd done it and that I was happy with what I put out. And at the same time, I was preparing to perform at the Leicester Pride on the main stage, which was like a dream come true for me.
How did you get that?
So it just, so I have this other friend. I've got lots of friends in my life. Anthony, and he has done a lot for the LGBT community, particularly the LGBT youth community, and he spoke to one of the organizers, Simon, and said to him, look, my friend's a really good singer, blah, blah, blah. He'd love to perform. And Simon was like, yeah, sure. The Pride Ball's coming up. Go for it. So I performed at the Pride Ball, and it was really good. And the feedback was good. So then he said, right, okay, next year you can perform on the main stage. And I nearly collapsed, because I was like, I can't believe this. This is just incredible. And so, yeah, I performed on the main stage in 2019. And again, that was just kind of like, I just can't believe that I've done that. And I don't know, to a lot of people that might not seem like a major thing, but to me, that was the best thing ever that happened to me that year. And then after that, I kind of said, oh, EP goes out. And I just put it out just to see what would happen.
No, I can completely understand that. Like, just with the crowd and everything and everyone there for like, because it's kind of supporting something that you believe in too. Like, yeah, no, I can see how that'd be a huge, huge thing.
Yeah. It was.
So, how do you, like, I'm asking now for advice, I suppose, but like, how do you go about writing a song if you're not musical? Did you just like sing something and then get somebody else to put music to it? Or like, how, writing your own songs, how does that work? Like,
it's really hard. Honestly, it's really hard. I remember with Me Against the World, it's gone through so many changes. So I'm just going to leave that one there. But with 12 Months and Forever, I wanted to write a romance song because I was feeling romantic at the time. Ugh, yeah. And so I said to my friend, this is what I want to do. And, you know, 12 months is what I've got as a starting. And she literally just strummed on her guitar and just sung the first few bars of it. And I was like, cool, this is great. And then we just made it rhyme. I'm not going to lie. We just sort of went through and made it rhyme. And then, again, the song went through so many different changes until it ended up to where it was. Because we weren't, when we started writing the song, because we weren't writing it with any purpose, we forgot the words probably about 12 times and kept losing it. So we had to keep writing that out again, which was a long process. But I think it was just coming up with that first original idea and then just having something to grab on. So what I would say to someone, and if I choose to write a song again, which I'm not sure at this point, have someone who can play an instrument be there to help you. Like, have them like be there to guide you through. Because obviously, like I said, I can't read, I can't write music, and I can't play an instrument. But I was able to say, you know, I want to go up here, or I want to go down here, or I want this to be the crescendo or whatever. And she just understood, and it just flew out of her fingers, and it was incredible. Because she's so musically minded. If I'd have tried to do it flat out on my own, I'd still probably be doing it now. It's quite a while ago. So,
yeah.
Thank God for Laura.
I think I'm just asking too much because I have had things that I can relate to that are similar, like singing along with friends, playing the piano, that kind of thing, and just making up as you go. And it just kind of feels a bit special, doesn't it? Like,
it really does. It really does. It feels like you can take on the world at that point.
Exactly. Yeah. No, it's great. I feel like I'll probably just call you back and plan something now. Like, let's get back on track. So what? It seems like your kind of big advice is to just kind of network and like find people that can do all these things that your friends that can hook you up with theatre and singing and acting and writing, and it all just seems to have kind of happened at the right time, right place somehow.
Yeah, I would definitely say that's my main advice. And just go for it. Like, there's so many things that so many of us want to do, and we come up with 12,000 excuses why we can't. Just go for it and give it a go. And then if it fails, you know, try again in a different way and keep trying again. And I think if you're determined, then the things that you want will come to you. If you're determined and you keep working at it. But I think also being realistic about your situation, I don't particularly want to be famous. I'm not doing this because that's what I want. I don't, you know, if someone from EastEnders came up to me right now and was like, bruv, you're going to be in the show, like, of course I'm going to be over the moon, I'm going to be in EastEnders. However, it's not what I'm trying to do. I'm not trying to do this to gain notoriety or fame or whatever, right? It's just because it's inside me and it needs to get out, and it needs to, you know, come into its own and stuff like that. That's why I do it. So I think any opportunity that came along, because I wasn't worried about how is this going to be seen if I went into an audition? Well, how, you know, what are people going to think about this because I did that? Because I wasn't worried about that. There was no opportunity to me that was ever wasted. Whereas I think other people and what we're taught in university, as performers going into the industry, we're taught to be very selective and very picky. And because it reflects on our reputations going forward. And I think in that way, people miss out on opportunities and they miss out on things that could push them forward. But because they judge them on the face value, then they don't get anywhere. And I think, don't judge things on the face value. Go forward, push forward, and do exactly what you want to do. That's my main advice.
It's good advice. So where do you want to go with this? Like, do you have like an idea of like where you want this to be a career, or like, you know, like famous or not famous, or like, what do you want to do? Like, it's like one of those job interview questions. Like, if you meet yourself in 10 years, who do you want to meet? You know, is that kind of...
I want my business to be successful. I want to be able to... Everyone that works with us at the minute are incredible. They are really incredible. But we're all volunteers, and it would be really nice if we could all be in a place where what we wanted to do creatively is what we could do for the rest, you know, as our main job. So I'd be really happy if the business is successful. If it gives more children and young people access to the arts and getting involved and gives them more inspiration going forward, that's a really main thing for me. I think along my life, I've always been kind of right in that I want to work with kids, but I also want to perform, and I want that equal balance. And I think Williams Creators kind of helps with that balance, because that's what I want to do, to see them succeed and move forward and go forward. So I think that's where I'll be quite happy with my business ticking along, everyone doing what they need to do, and moving forward and churning out a show every now and again.
Do you do like work creatively with the kids as well, or do you kind of keep the two things separately?
So with my kids at work, I don't, because we do have separate lives. Do you know what I mean?
It's about of course,
making sure you have those boundaries. But it is something that I want to do more with Williams Creatives and what we would have done had this year not been the way it was. So we've got so many community projects planned that are aimed at children and young people and supporting children and young people. So I'd like to kind of do it through that way. But yeah, with the kids at work, I don't kind of mix those lives. Every now and again, it will mix, mostly when I'm like singing in the office. And they're like, oh, you can actually sing. You're not just the person that, you know, comes in and attends our meetings, et cetera.
Yeah, and it's this weird thing where you have to kind of like have this professional persona, and then your kind of creative persona is like a different thing as well. And it's,
it's really weird. It is like being two people. But again, if I can't do that by this point, then there's a problem.
So everyone just needs to go out and be two people, and then we can be happy. So
and then we'll all be really happy.
So you were saying about like being able to like live from this and have it be your main thing, but you know, you've made money doing the murder mysteries and presumably something off the theaters. Like, how much bigger does this need to be for you to have the option to just be like, okay, I'm just going to do the creative thing?
I don't know. Honestly, I mean, I think probably Sharon is the one to answer that question, because she's the money person, and I'm the creative person. So I don't really know. I think I will just know when it's time, almost, to just kind of say, okay, that's what I'm going to focus on. But again, it's that thing that made me go out and get a adult full-time job when I left uni. I don't want to be broke. Like, I don't want to be, that's not what I'm trying to do here. And if that happens, we've got no backup, you know, we need to be able to live our lives and do what we need to do. And again, I think I'm in a new transition period. I'm about to be 30, I'm about to get married, and all of these things are about to happen that I want to happen. So there needs to be a balance, really. So, you know, 10 years' time, if I'm still not doing it full time, then something's not gone quite right. But I don't think that will be a thing. I think it will be all right.
But there's no like direct plan to, oh, I've got to be here by here. You're just kind of like pushing it along and it seems to be working out for you.
Yes, because I was the type of person who at 18 had my whole life planned out. And I followed that plan to a T, and that plan jumped up and fly kicked me in my face. So from that point, I have said, no planning. We're just going to do what's happening. We're just going to move forward, and we're going to take the opportunities that come to us, and we're going to, you know, make sure that we actually appreciate the things that we can and can't do, and find a way to do what we can't. Really, that's my sort of main thing. And I think it's worked. I think I've worked with, over the last 2.5 years since Williams Creators became a thing, I've worked with such incredible people. And I never would have done that if I'd have stuck to the plan. So I'm just going to go with the flow, see what happens. I think that's me.
I've got Doris Day in my head now. I'm like, okay, sit down.
Yep, that's me.
I like it. So are there any like things that, like, I don't know, like people, famous people who you'd want to be like, or like films and theatre and like plays and things that kind of inspired you to start all this, or has it just always been there and you don't quite know where it's come from?
There was a film called Outrageous Fortune with Shelley Long and Bette Midler. That was my favourite film as a kid. I was obsessed. And to be fair, I say as a kid, I'm 29 years old and I can still tell you every single line that every character says in that film. Like, nice. It's a real problem. And I think I used to watch that film over and over and over again, and I was like, I can do this. Like, I want to do that. I want to do exactly what they're doing on screen, even though I'd be terrified to try. And I was like, okay, that's what I want to do at some point. But it always just kind of felt like a bit of a dream rather than actually happening, moving forward. And so I think because it felt like a dream, that is why I kept kind of ignoring it, doing something else and thinking, yeah, okay, I've done that for a bit now. That was fun. But now I'm going to focus on this and I can only have this. So I'm going to do that. And then that's why at the beginning, it was very stop-starty, I think, for me. I think when I went to university and started to learn about different practitioners, I think Samuel Beckett and Howard Barker were massively inspirational to me. Like, I loved what they were doing. And that definitely did influence On the Surface We Smile and the theatrical devices I used in that and the way that I wrote it, like their work. I think particularly Howard Barker, because that was a practitioner that we worked with in our third year performance at uni. Well, we worked with the wrestling school. But I remember him coming to visit us at university and I was bricking it. Like, I just couldn't cope. I was proper fangirling. It was not okay. And and I think I was even more scared because we were doing extracts from a play called The Ecstatic Bible, which was 8.5 hours long. And because of its length, had never been performed in the UK, only ever been performed once in Australia. So I was playing the lead character in this play for the first time in the UK. And so I was terrified when I met him. I was like, I'm going to do this wrong. This is going to be really bad. I don't really understand why my tutor's done this to me. And I remember just listening to him throughout that day. And I just thought, this guy is incredible. Like, the way his mind works and the characters that he wrote and trying to understand what he puts forward and how he puts that forward was just the most incredible experience. And I felt like when I was writing, that's what I was trying to make people feel about what I was writing and what I was doing. And yeah, that was really, really, really inspirational to me. And then I kind of shifted again. And because the kind of characters that I was playing were kind of always like the funny one or always the one making jokes or whatever. And I feel like at that time, Melissa McCarthy was like literally like exploding in Hollywood or whatever. And so she was really inspirational to me. I just found her hilarious, like absolutely hilarious from start to finish. I just found her so funny. And so I found myself kind of like picking up bits of her in and that physical comedy in the comedy that I was doing. And then when I've written my next play, which is called What Did You Wish For? Again, bringing in that comedy and that physical comedy has kind of come from that. So lots of different things can sort of inspire me in different ways. Like a short play that I've written over lockdown called Let Me Let Go is I heard a song. And I was listening to the song as I was driving along. And then the song stopped and it was just silent. And I just wrote this play in my head. And I went home and I just had to write it out. I just had to just get it done. And then I was like, oh, okay, cool. That's what that was. And then just sort of moved on again. So yeah, lots of different things sort of inspire me and moving forward. But I definitely think Samuel Beckett, Howard Barker are like the top for me. Like if I could resurrect anyone, it would be Samuel Beckett. Me and him can have a chat because some of his stuff is very confusing and I need answers.
So it's interesting you say you just like had a song and you like wrote a play and then it's ready. Like, do you have plans to like put that out there now, or did you just need to write it?
Yeah, we're gonna do what we sort of planned coming out of lockdown is rather than big shows. Want to do almost like micro shows that are for smaller audiences so we can keep everyone safe on stage and off stage, but also so that if they get cancelled, it's not like this major thing that's caused a huge problem. So we've talked about doing like, because it's a two-hander at play, and another guy that works in my company, John Boyle, who's also a writer, has written another two-hander. So we're going to kind of do like a double bill for that. So yeah, sometimes they are just throwaway almost, or they come out and I go, oh, that's not very good, and then I kind of move on. And then sometimes it's like, okay, this is an idea that works. But yeah, lots of kind of things can sort of trigger me off. Again, talking, I mentioned Chris Brown, the guy that I did the film with. I still can't remember. I'm going to remember it before the end of this interview. And we will talk to each other for hours about different ideas and different characters and different film ideas. And we will literally, we'll do that in like a really intense space for like 2 or 3 weeks. And then life happens. So then we won't speak for like a month or 2 months. And then we'll come back and it's like, oh, this character, this idea and stuff like that. And I think definitely if I was to be more successful and have the finances available, there's definitely some ideas there that I would run with because they're actually really cool, but it's just life and practicality that's stopping it from being a thing. Does that make sense?
I can relate to a lot of what you're saying. I feel like you're pushing it harder than a lot of people, you know, like many people kind of have this idea, oh, I want to do this and I need a real job, and then they just kind of settle into the real job, and then next thing you know it's like getting married or having kids or whatever, or wanting to buy a new kitchen. And it's like, yeah, the creative thing can wait. It can wait.
Yeah.
And I feel like you've always, from what you're saying, like you've said a couple of times, and I wasn't really going for it, but it seems like consistently you have always been pushing the creative on the side. And I think that's kind of what it takes.
I think sometimes it feels like you just sort of stop, but really it never really does. It's just bubbling somewhere. And it's just waiting for something to trigger you off and sort of go, yeah, okay, cool, let's go again. And yeah, I think now I'm just so excited, there's nothing that could stop me. I cannot wait to come back. We've got lots of different like WhatsApp groups for like the musical guys and the guys that are more into, you know, the straight serious theater and stuff like that. And everyone's buzzing in there about coming back, and it's like, I just can't wait. Like, and even though it's hard, like you don't get me wrong, it's very hard. My real life job is very full on. It's lots of hours. It's very emotional and stuff like that. So to do all of this on the side is difficult and it's hard. And there's times when I don't see my boyfriend for weeks on end because I'm all over the place. And I'm like, yeah, sure, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. So there does have to be a line where you say, okay, sleep is a thing. But it's so rewarding. It's just incredible. I couldn't change it. And I think even though it's been nice in a way to kind of have a bit of a break to slow down over lockdown, I just can't imagine this being like my life forever and not doing anything again. Like it would drain me off. So yeah, I can't wait. And that's why I think you need to still stay enthusiastic by it. Still need to get excited by it.
And do you know how you're going to like start up again? Like what you say, you've got like the little plays and things, but do you have like a plan for what comes first? Like you're kind of getting your creative life back out there.
Yeah. So what did you wish for is this is my time for this now. So that's kind of going to follow the same formula as on the surface. So I want to do like a preview of it and then get feedback and then be able to do like a main performance of it and then look at a tour in the future. So that's kind of, for me personally, that's what I'm focusing on at the minute. And I'm so excited by it. Like, I think the characters in it are so much fun, but they're dealing with things that, you know, it's because it's all about couples dealing with their relationships breaking down, which you wouldn't imagine is fun, but it is. It's hilarious because some of them are breaking down for ridiculous things, or some of them you can see right from the beginning what the problem is, and they're just beating around the bush. And I feel like it's just got a nice light atmosphere to it. And I think it's a side of my writing that I haven't let anybody see before, because I've been concerned that I'm not actually particularly funny. I think it's easier to write drama than it is to write comedy, because you need to think that you're slightly funny, and then you're hoping that other people find you funny. Like, sad will always be sad. I guess some people won't tap into their emotions or whatever, but sad will always be sad. But what I find funny, you might watch and go, this is ridiculous, this makes no sense. So I think this has been a real challenge for me, but I'm really excited to do that. That's sort of the main thing for me. In terms of Williams Creatives, we are going to be doing another miscast next year called Miscast All Inclusive. Which is kind of like making the formula different again. It's always just kind of been like musical number, musical number, musical number, and you just go from one to one to one to one, which, by the way, is insane. Like, in the first show, I had 15 costume changes, and a lot of them were very, very quick. Like, it's a lot. So this time we said, let's do something new. And so we have written a storyline, and so these songs sort of attach to the storyline. Which is really cool. So we're really excited to work on that with the new cast. And then we're just working on the community side of our business as well, which is also really important to us. And one of the things we're going to be doing is Miscast Kids, which will be like a summer program next year, which I'm really excited about to get people involved in. And there will be an element of film to that as well, which will be really cool. And about teaching these kids these new skills. And giving them the opportunity to actually perform in them.
So what's the film? Kind of where we are. What's the film element? I'm just remembers he's doing a film podcast.
It's true. I'm sorry.
No, it's good. It's good. I like it.
The film element. So we'll be teaching the kids about different elements of film. So it'll be about writing for film and TV. So they'll be writing small different elements that fit into the main show, and then about the skills of acting in front of a camera, because I feel like when you're doing drama in high school, college, uni, whatever, there's almost this thing that you'll get in front of a camera and you'll be absolutely incredible because you're so great in the classroom, and actually it's a completely different skill, and a lot of times, unless you choose to do film as your track, you don't learn these skills. So you just assume that because you've learned how to act, you can act in front of a camera. And then you get in front of a camera and you're absolutely awful because they're completely different. So we want to teach them about being in front of the camera. And then the kids that don't ever want to be in front of the camera, we want to teach them about filming from the other side, and then giving them an opportunity to see themselves as well on a big screen. Because sometimes that little thing sparks inspiration in a child to move forward and keep doing more, because they see themselves on that screen and it's a whole different element to them. So that's what we want to do with that. So there'll be kids that are focusing on musicals and theatre and performance, and then kids that are focusing on filming, and then we're going to bring it together. So it'll be a big project. It'll be a lot of work, and we're still pulling it all together and deciding how it will work and stuff like that. But we are super excited for it, because it's our first big main thing that's not benefiting the performers, but actually benefiting the community around us.
Yeah, it sounds really good, and it seems like it ties all your passions together in a way. What age would those kids be that's targeted at?
That's what we're kind of still working out, but it will probably be, I would say, 14 and up, particularly for the film element of it. But then we're also deciding on, do we do different cohorts almost for different ages that do slightly different things? So at the minute, we're very much in the planning phase of this and very much talking about what we're going to do next and pulling it together. But I imagine it's going to be quite an in-depth project that's going to take a lot of work, but will be really rewarding at the end. Can't wait for it. Really excited for that.
I suppose my other obvious film question is, would you be interested in either like adapting yourself or getting someone to adapt any of these plays that you're writing into films? Or like, how do you think that might work?
Yeah, I'd be really interested in that, to be fair. I'm not sure if I am a film writer. Like I said, I've done a couple of bits and pieces, but I don't particularly think they're that great. I'm not even going to lie. So I think it would be me handing over my script to somebody else and getting them to adapt it. But I think On the Surface We Smile, I think that could definitely work in the film ways. And I think that would actually be really cool to see that different aspect of it. I would love, to be fair, somebody else to perform that, and for me to watch somebody else perform it and see it from the outside.
So you'd kind of want that to be developed in a film, but like you, other than having written the original story, not be involved until there's, here's a film.
Yeah. I mean, I say that, but I'm also really bad at stepping back. like I said, On the Surface was going to be performed 3 times, and I wouldn't let go of Jackson. Like, I wouldn't even entertain somebody else as playing that character. So I'm really bad at stepping back. So although I'm saying it right now, if someone said I want to make this into a film, I probably would fight for that character.
So you'd probably still want to be the character, is what you mean?
Yeah, I love him. I can't put him down. He's really, really cool.
That's going to be a problem if people start buying your plays to perform, and you're like, no, I'm going to have to come and play the part. Someone in Australia wants to buy your play, and you're like, no, well, you're not having it unless I'm in it.
I know, it's going to become problematic, but and I will have to let go eventually. But I do you know what?
Not until you age out of it. When you age out of it, yeah. But until then, you can just be like...
Until then, I'm going to hold on. But no, I feel like... Because I feel like another big reason why I've written... Because I ain't going to lie to you. I always write with a character in mind that I would play in different situations.
That's a clever thing to do.
I think part of it has been because I've never really seen characters on the TV in plays or whatever that I think represent me, or I would have had a chance at getting, if that makes sense. So I feel like I almost create these roles that are like, okay, I'm never going to get this in real life, so I'll just create it and I'll do it here. And then I can say that I've done it and kind of move forward from there. And I think that is a little bit of me sort of doubting myself, but also looking at the demographic and not really seeing a lot of, 6'3" black gay characters that are represented in the way that I represent myself.
To be fair, I'm not sure how many people fit that demographic.
I mean, I would just like to see a little bit more diversity. That would be lovely.
I see what you're saying.
I think as well... I think as well, sort of me as a gay person, I've never hidden it at all. If someone's asked me, cool, whatever. But I also don't run around being like, hey, I'm gay, woo! And so the people, when I see characters played like that on television or in plays or whatever, I kind of look at it and I go, I can't relate with that. That doesn't make any sense to me. Because I just don't, I don't feel every character or every person is the same. I think we're all different.
I think there is a danger when, like, a lot of the stuff I see now, like, everything's trying to say, like, let's include this. But it seems like quite often you end up with these two-dimensional characters that are just that thing that they're trying to represent.
Yeah. And that frustrates me and irritates me. And it's never a character that I would necessarily want to play. Like, there comes a time, I think, particularly in murder mysteries, you'll have characters that are almost, that are really stereotypical, but that's because we need to get across the type of character they are very, very quickly. Like, yeah, we don't have time to give all the exposition and all that, we don't have time for it. But I think when it comes to film and TV and stuff, I just tend to gravitate towards the characters who, yes, they're gay, but it's not the be all and end all, and it's not the only thing that is them. You know what I mean? And it doesn't feel stereotypical. It just feels like they're totally normal people, rather than feeling like it's almost being caricatured, and they're almost, yeah, being treated in that way as if it's something different, and it's not. It just is what it is. I think I would be totally happy if, and I understand we need labels or else no one knows what the hell is going on, but I'd be totally happy if there just was no labels and it just was what it was and we don't really have to go into it. And I think the type of characters that I write are those characters where, and I do write a lot of gay characters, I think there's one in everything I've ever written, but I think that's me just kind of working out how I want to represent them in what I do. And, you know, I've got no qualms about how people want to do things in their different ways. That's their business. But in the way that I do it, yeah, I think the characters are just kind of trying to work out how to put forward what they need without that being the main be all and end all. Like, yeah.
No, and I think obviously as a writer, most people are going to, you know, whatever you write, it's going to be part of who you are. So if that is part of your identity, it's going to come up more often than it would for like somebody who it's not part of their identity, because it's just like people have issues that resonate. And so those are the things that come up in the creative work.
But I think a lot now, there's a hell of a lot more that as when I was younger, I would have loved to see on TV. So I think there's a hell of a lot more now and a hell of a lot more issues that they're approaching that affect LGBTQ people. That are in the right strain. They're exactly where we need to be. They're showing the right things. Whereas back in the day, it just wasn't a thing. And if they were if you saw a gay person on the program, most of the time they were massively flamboyant or whatever. And that's just not me. I mean, I can be, but it's not me. And so it just doesn't resonate with me. Yeah, I'm just really excited to doing new stuff this time around. I think lockdown's given us a really unique opportunity to do more, and that's what I want to do.
Yeah, no, it's actually been like really fun talking to you, and it's like nice for me to get this perspective of theatre, because it's given me ideas like, oh, I could write a play. Because I've never thought of it, but I've never entertained the idea. I've never sat down and tried to write one. But I think what plays get that films don't really have is this kind of immediacy. You know, if you're there and it's performed and you kind of can get an audience reaction straight away.
I think it's just like a totally different world. And I think in a film, there's times when, like I remember doing a short film when I was younger and I was trying to do this really emotional scene with this other character. And I just remember becoming very, very aware that there was a camera like right here. There was like 12 other people in the room just staring at me, and it just didn't feel authentic. And so I was really struggling to get there and do what I need to do. And I've just never found that same thing when I've been doing a murder mystery or performing on stage, because I feel like, because it doesn't feel so technical or like there is, you know, people right in your face, you can kind of get lost. And those lights looking out at the audience and not actually being able to see them, because 9 times out of 10 you can't, because the lights blind you, I almost make you feel like you're genuinely in that place. And doing that night after night as well, every single performance is different. Like, one of the things I love about Murder Mysteries is that once you get good at a specific character, you tend to get recast as that character repeatedly, which is really, really cool, because there might be a night that you do it and you go, I really fluffed that up. I weren't feeling it. It just weren't a thing. And then the next time you do it, you're like, yep, smashed it. Next time you do it, you're like, oh my God, that was even better. And you could just kind of keep, improving that performance. And it's the same with theatre when you've got multiple nights to perform. But I think when you're in front of the camera, you obviously do as many takes as you do, and then it's done. That's it. And then I just find myself sort of sat there and picking apart every single thing that I do and every line that I've said and stuff like that, because I can. Because I can go back and look at it, but I can't have an opportunity to make it better. I think that's the thing that moves me away from film towards theatre. That thing of not being able to go back and make it better. I don't know. I'm the strangest person, because I love performing. I love doing what I'm doing. But I would quite happily jump out of the theatre window before I walked out into the foyer. I just quite happily do that and run away and not actually speak to anyone. And it's not because I don't want to. It's just because I get really, really shy when I'm done doing what I need to do. And I'm just like, okay, cool. See you later. Bye. And I just run off.
Could you pinpoint the thing the most, or do you just like it all? I mean, is it the writing, the directing, the acting, the singing? Like, which is the thing that you just enjoy the most?
I would probably say the acting, because I think it's one that's constantly evolving and constantly getting better in my eyes, and I'm learning more and more about it. Whereas I feel like, and again, not tooting my own horn or anything, but I know how to sing. I know what I'm doing. Although there's songs that someone will say, can you sing that? And I listen to it. And I'm like, oh, Jesus, how am I going to get up there? I know how to sing. I know what I'm doing. I'm good. Whereas with acting, I feel like I'm still learning. And with writing, I'm still learning and still putting in different things. And I think, I'm going to go with acting and writing, because I think my voice changes in them both. As I get older and as I experience different things. And I'm super excited, which is really weird. I don't want to be 30. I'm really not happy about that. But I'm also super excited to move into a different age bracket and play different characters, which is weird.
Okay. I think we're going to have to end it, because we've been going for nearly an hour and a half now, and I try to keep them an hour-ish. is there anything else that you want us to look up on you online, or anything you want to promote before we end it?
Yeah, I think keep an eye on our website, williamscreatives.co.uk. We've got some really incredible opportunities coming up, not only to perform, but to also work behind the scenes within the committee and on performances, which will be really great. And just sort of keep an eye, because we do have some exciting things coming that I didn't talk about on purpose, which will be exciting.
So I've got to keep clicking refresh now.
Yeah, basically.
All right, really good talking to you, and I hope everyone listening has enjoyed the episode.
Brilliant, thank you.
Right. Bye.